This is Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. On today's episode, I'm joined by Evan Nebaker, a longtime Fresno entrepreneur, festival organizer, and the founder of Grizzly Fest, who's now helping lead a new wave of sober, community-centered events in our city through Grand Rising. We talk about where he likes to eat in Fresno, what it takes to build a major music festival, and why alcohol's become such a default setting in how we socialize, not only here, but in our country more broadly. From sober parties and mocktails to pickleball, weed culture, and why Fresno struggles to support large public events, this conversation ultimately is how cities build community and what gets in the way. It's a wide-ranging conversation. I know you'll really enjoy Evan. Let's go meet him.
To infiltrate the pod waves on infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best!
So, Evan, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
My favorite restaurants in Fresno would be Annex, Limelight, Saison. You could throw in there. Heirloom is good. But my favorite is the Mad Duck. Just for personal reasons, I love the Mad Duck. I love that it's Fresno-owned, and I just like to see their growth. I think they're a special team they have.
Yeah, it's funny. Mad Duck is, I think it's maybe underappreciated for what it is, because it's hard to run a restaurant with that kind of locations and keep the quality the same. What do you like about Mad Duck?
I like that it feels like family. I recall when the first one opened, knowing Jacob and Alex, it was really cool to see how it was built with family. Family was in there laying bricks, things like that. It's cool to see that they have several open and it's still the same team. They haven't had feuds and internal things. Like, they all generally love and root for each other. My kids gravitate towards it on their own. So if I let them choose where we're going for dinner, they'll throw that out. So it's a kid favorite. So I think they've done really something special of making an adult feel comfortable, where you can still bring your kids and they're comfortable on their own. The food is above average. The pricing is fair. And again, it's locally owned. And I have some connection to one of the owners. He's a friend of mine and a great quality human being.
Do you have a preferred location of Mad Duck? Because that's what I've learned in Fresno living here, is that, like, the local chains, if you will, there's always preferred locations where people rep their neighborhood or whatever. Do you have a preferred?
I've noticed that the Mad Duck has things about locations. For instance, their Bowler and West, big cocktail crowds, a lot of people that ride their golf carts over. My preferred location would probably be the original. I have some just ties to it and good memories. I'm super excited about, they have an airport location opening.
Hold on, which one's the original?
The original is Herndon and Willow.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. And then there's the one that you mentioned. Is that Herndon and West or Bullard and West?
Herndon and Marks.
Herndon and Marks. There you go. Yeah. No, I could get a sense that there's a different crowd, a different energy in that place versus the Fresno State one. And I don't know if I've been to the original one. I'm trying to think.
But. Yeah, smaller, real fun. But also, they have an airport location opening that I'm excited about. And then they have a private spot opening in one of their locations, a place called the Golden Hour, opening inside their Copper and Maple location. That's like a high-end cocktail lounge, 21 and over, reservations only.
It is interesting that there's not very many restaurants near the airport. It feels like someone needs to capitalize on that or something, because there's a few hotels, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, where would you go if you were staying near the airport to eat?
It's not great. The option's right there. If you were just to park and walk, or someone from out of town, it's pretty limited.
Yeah. There's lots of things I want to talk about. We're going to talk about sober stuff here in a minute. But before we get there, I want to ask you a few questions about Grizzly Fest, if you're down.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. I've never talked to someone that started a music festival, which is, it sounds like a really complicated thing. Can you take us maybe in broad strokes what it looks like to go from ideation to implementation or execution on something like that?
Yeah. So time. So from the first one in 2012, the idea of what we wanted to create and what we thought was necessary, with where it got to 2019, 2020, was worlds different. In 2012, it was like we had seen them in other regions. I was traveling with an artist by the name of Fashan, and a guy named PLG, who was a X Games skater. He's won a few X Games gold medals. Shout out Pierre. And so I was able to see music festivals in other cities, other states, other countries. And so it was just something where we're like, okay, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Let's bring this to Fresno in the most Fresno way we can, in terms of it being not too much and fit to what we have, and then grow from there. And I really feel like that's what we did. But you can't really ever understand how detailed it's going to be till you get into it. You have your community aspect, you have the political side, you have funding, you have sponsors, and these are all things that you're negotiating and working with yearly, unless the city gives you a 5 or 10 year deal, which the city of Fresno didn't offer to us.
Is it difficult to lure musical acts to Fresno? Yes. If you're not Save Mart Center or whatever?
Yes, for sure.
Okay, what does that actually look like to lure them in?
You need a connection to the artists, their camp, their management. That's the easiest way. Anyone can go and pay for it, and eventually you could probably get it. It might take a few more months and a few more hundred thousands or millions or whatever it is, depending upon the artist. But the most genuine, best way to book an artist and get an artist for anything is if you already have any kind of contact, any kind of relation. An example is I do have a lot of bookings with DJ K Rich. We got a deal with Chase Auto a few years ago, and we're still doing their events to this day because they needed access to an artist and their management company for the bank couldn't get the artist, whereas we were able to get contact with the artist the same day.
Okay.
And so it takes, that's extremely helpful. You can go to any agency, but you have to play the games with the agents and the booking agents, and okay, there's so many layers with so much more money, and you want that stuff to be, you want to have the contract and have it legit, but there's just so many layers of fluff and bullshit that is so time consuming and draining.
Is there like a point in which that stuff starts to happen? Is there like a threshold where some musical acts are easy to lure in because maybe they're trying to fill out a touring schedule, and then others it's like you have to work for months and months?
Yeah, you could get lucky and get people on routing. So when we were doing Grizzly Fest, we had a good enough relationship with some of the major booking agencies that they might let us know certain people are going to be routings in those areas around the time of your festival. And that's going to be the best price for you because they're already on a route, so you're not covering as much travel. They might already have their instruments, their band, their production, things like that with them. And so you don't have to go pay for that. Whereas if it's a one-off show, I'm going to book you, but I might still have to pay for all of your stuff with. So it's like there's your cost, but then there's really the cost of the show still. So the relationships are great. You get the opportunities to jump on those. But when you're getting a music festival, no one's giving you any discount. They're taxing you by 1.5 to 2.5. It's a very dirty game.
Yeah. Grizzly Fest came to a sad end in my mind. And I listened this morning. I listened to Gary Bredefeld's explanation of why Grizzly Fest, he felt it should belong downtown. And he mentioned his, what I'll call, phantom mob of noise complainers.
Yeah.
But what's funny to me is we have Boots in the Park every year. That's pretty noisy too.
Yeah.
My interpretation is that it's not really about noise. It's about who comes to those kinds of things.
I agree.
What was your experience of that closure on the event?
Yeah. So 2018 is when it got crazy, right? So 2012, we're at the fairgrounds. Great. We go, then it grows a little. We go to the baseball stadium downtown. We do a few years in a row. It grows, it grows, it grows. Great. There's still red tape, but not as much. We decided we want to go to Woodward Park. We have our vision, our brand, everything's growing, right? A lot of pushback because we wanted to have Snoop Dogg, because we had Snoop Dogg as a headliner for one of the days. At the time, Snoop Dogg was a 50-something-year-old grandfather who'd already done his Martha Stewart projects. But yeah, certain people didn't want Snoop there. What it came across as, certain people didn't want people they perceived who would be fans of that artist at that time of day. At least that's what it came across to me. So we had to go through a series of city council, where it just wasted time, energy, confused consumers on, is it happening? Is it not going to happen? It was happening the whole time. There was just time wasted, energy wasted. The show went off great. We didn't have crazy fights, things like that. I know Boots in the Park uses the same setup we use now. I've never seen them go to city council because an artist they have. But again, Bredefeld would have to answer that. We even tried
He'll never answer that, but yeah.
We even tried to have him introduce Nas because Nas is from New York. Nas is from Queens. Bredefeld's from that area. He wasn't even open to that.
Yeah.
And that was just, could have been a beautiful thing for the city, actually.
Yeah. It's sad when politicians do things like that, and it just comes across as cowardly. But let's jump to sober stuff now, which I have so many questions about this. What kind of big picture, what do you perceive to be going on with alcohol right now in our culture? It's like in a weird moment, right? Where it's like bifurcating. There's people that use a lot and people don't use at all. And this kind of like very small, moderate middle. So how would you describe it?
I love it right now. There's a lot of change happening. There's what I'm seeing is people, I'm a 40-something-year-old man. A lot of people in my age range grew up drinking heavy. I know sometimes as you get older in life, you might start to slow down because natural things. So I'm seeing that amongst people in their 40s. But the major shift has been like the teenage up crowd of people who just don't really drink, don't drink at all, or they know that drinking doesn't run their life. It doesn't control their decisions. Whereas some people in their 40s, it's like everyone would meet at the bar for the night before Thanksgiving.
Cheers or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, the younger group, they're not as much like that. They're more...
Because that was my next question was, is this like a society zeitgeist change, or is this, do you see it as a generational change?
I kind of think both. So do you see that it's for sure generational? But there are a huge percentage of people in their high 30s to mid 50s that are just making the change for health reasons on top of age. And it's just, it makes it feel like it's everything, but it's, you can't deny like that 18 to 30-ish crowd drinking far less, putting less value on alcohol. And I love to see it. I think it's great.
What do you think are causal things we can look at? Is it like the public health messaging? Is it celebrities being Cali sober? Is it something else like internet stuff causing this? What do you speculate is a cause here?
This is pure speculation. Cali sober is for sure huge. I just think people realize I don't need to beat myself up and beat my body up and pay all this money to do it.
A very expensive habit.
It is. There's no time I wouldn't go and have drinks that I wouldn't spend $100 to $300 every single night. And that's just in my 20s and 30s having drinks. If I buy a friend a drink, we get a bottle. And that's just in Fresno. That's a very expensive thing when the next day I don't feel good or I didn't sleep as well. And I'm chasing hard the next day to try to catch up to even be average.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a huge hole to dig in. And so as you get older, it's, I can't keep digging in this, or how often can I? Whatever it is. But again, just to touch on it, I love to see it. I think that people are just very open-minded, just how this younger generation is more likely to speak their mind and stand up for people because they feel it's wrong or right or whatever the reason is. It's powerful and it's cool to be in their energy and kind of soak it up too.
Yeah, there's a kind of moral integrity to how kids these days are operating, where they see kind of hypocrisy or contradictions and moral frameworks as like a lot more serious, I feel like, than my generation or generations past.
Do 100%.
Do you think that alcohol is destined for kind of a place like cigarettes, where it still is a part of society, but it's like this smaller slice? People might use it more occasionally. I'll have a cigarette like once in a blue moon, just I'm at a bar with some friends or something, but I don't go and buy a pack or anything.
Right.
Is that what it's destined for? Do you think alcohol is still too central?
I think it's still too central. As I'm going through this holiday season, I can't name one holiday event I've gone to outside of a Grand Rising meeting that didn't have somebody drinking.
Yeah.
So that's still people's comfort. That's still, hey, I'm going to meet friends for dinner. I'm going to have a drink. I'm going to a Christmas party. Hey, I'm going to have a drink. Office holiday party. Hell yeah, let's have a drink.
Yeah.
And so it still dominates all that.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of those people I'm seeing in that are 30s and up.
Yeah.
I could tell you that a lot of the bars were more dead the night before Thanksgiving the last 2 years than previous ones, but that's just a small little.
Yeah. Maybe college kids are not coming back with the interest in binging or whatever it is. Now, there's something I think about if alcohol maybe phases out or becomes a smaller kind of piece of the pie chart.
Okay.
Is restaurants. Restaurants oftentimes live and die by the margins on alcohol. And I know there's a lot of events like Art Hop right before the city attacked it. It alcohol was a major component of it.
Yeah.
And so if alcohol phases out as the dominant like social activity, what do you picture happening to events and maybe restaurants?
Event-wise, it would hurt. Art Hop was the last, before it got attacked, and it definitely got attacked in my opinion, was more of a alcohol, food, and vendor street fair.
Yeah.
Versus actual Art Hop. So I think that those places would take a huge hit. I think certain restaurants, like the more high-end, decent restaurants, the ones I mentioned, at least in my opinion that I like, and a few other ones, I think they're going to be fine no matter what.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think that some establishments, I think, could take a hit from that. I've seen some nightlife places already start to pivot. An example would be, we're holding our next Grand Rising at Azara Supper Club, which is a nightclub that's just remodeled and reopened. But they see the trend in that.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to introduce that they're going to do mocktails and that they're open for those type things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we change subjects, I want to talk about weed for a second. I've got a couple theories about weed. I think when something becomes mainstream, I look at beer, for example, when it moved out of the lanes of the 70s and 80s, where there's a few big brands that you can buy, and we get in the craft world, things get higher ABVs, they get more intense.
Yeah.
And I see that with weed right now. If you go to a dispensary, you know, the bud tender is going to probably ask you, do you want something that's coated in something?
Yeah, everything's infused.
Infused, and the vape pens, I don't know what, if this is true, but they'll say 93% strength. Yeah. And I'm like, how is that? How are we not in all in comas using that?
People just want to get higher. How can I get higher than the last time? Or like, how can I?
Yeah. So what's going to be, in your mind, what's going to be the outcome if we just keep ratcheting up the strength and intensity of the marijuana that we sell?
So I love this question. Reason being is I have big ties to the marijuana world. I own dispensaries over a decade ago. And so I'm still in tune with dispensaries. I still work with some of them. I think that people just want to get higher. People want to get more drunk. People want to get more effed up, right? Like people are kind of always chasing that. I myself, I'm a THC fan. I prefer just flower, but you see a ton of infused things on the market.
Yeah.
It's almost harder when you look for certain things to find it non-infused versus.
Yeah.
I can't tell you absolutely why. I just think that people want to make sure they're getting the feeling.
Okay.
That they probably give up some things just to get the feeling. Might less taste, might things like that.
Yeah.
I could tell you about cartridges though. I have over 10 years experience of cartridges and ran white labeling for some brands. A lot of cartridges are bullshit. So you have your cartridge that your full cartridge, it'll be filled with THC to 70% or whatever it is, the stuff that you want to smoke, that you want to ingest if you want to get higher for that feeling. But then the other 30-25%, there's things that are deemed allowed, legal, that they fill in and mix in, and that's what you're smoking. If you want to use drug terms, it's like a filler, a cutter. It's stuff that you don't want in there, but it's allowed. And so there's a lot of bullshit that if you were to smoke cartridges for a few weeks straight, you will have phlegm in your throat. You will have little weird coughs. Those things happen. To me, a cartridge is more like a synthetic weed too. It's not, it's like, it gives you a boost for a few minutes, but it's not like a real thing if you were to smoke a joint of like quality indoor flower.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of that. I don't think the stores are necessarily going anywhere. In Fresno, they have too many licensed ones that there will have to be a few that go, or licenses will continue to get sold behind the scenes. Yeah, I'm not sure if I got off topic.
Yeah, well, no, you didn't. I was just, I don't know. I see some of my friends that are going, they're seeking the more and more intense high.
Yeah.
And it feels like that is a bit of a trap. Yeah. And it's going to get people stuck. And that kind of leads to my next question, which is the other kind of lens that I think about weed is I think it's similar to what's happened to music in some ways, where, you know, a long time ago, you would go in your room, put on a record and just sit on your bed and listen to a record. It was music was like an isolated experience.
Yeah.
And now music has become ambiance for people where they just put on music so that there's sound in a house or there's energy in a room, not really for whatever the music is necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel that way about weed now, where I have friends that just have vape pens on them constantly and they're just like periodically smoking weed throughout the day.
Yeah.
So the day is just, it's got this kind of veneer of you're somewhat high most of the day.
Yeah.
And it's become this kind of like just a lifestyle as opposed to an event.
Yep.
Do you see that as a problem? Or do you think weed should be something that's like, it's Friday night, you're going to watch a dumb movie, you're going to order a pizza with some friends and hang out? Or do you see it as I'm just functioning and I'm going to have a little weed right before I mow the lawn or do dishes?
Yeah. So it's okay. So when we were in the dispensary business, I learned to not guess, because I could never tell, right? Some people would come in, they'd be veterans. Some people would come in, they were just having a tough day. Some people had different mental makeups. And so I don't know, but what I could tell you for me is I'll decide. Like usually I'm a daily THC user, but I'll use it like I'm going to smoke a joint or half a joint before my run or right after my run in the morning, something like that.
Yeah.
And then I might not use it again the rest of the day, or I might in that evening if I get opportunity to. But there might be a one day in a week or one day in a month where it's like, hey, I don't have anything going on for these 4 hours. I'm going to get super high and watch a movie, because I would love to do that. I just don't get to do that with my family structure as much, but I would love to do that.
Yeah. Sometimes with kids being around, there's that funny Cat Williams bit about it's okay to get high, but it's not okay to get high and eat all of your kids' cereal.
But I felt what you said about the music thing, because music is one of my few little passions in life. I love music.
Yeah.
And so I always say, do you hear the music or do you feel the music? Because there's a lot of people that hear the music.
Yeah.
And so I like to think that I feel the music, but I probably dabble. There's times when I'll put on an album and I want to listen to an album from start to finish the way that the artist laid it out. And I think to stop it or to skip around is fucking lame.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's me on my high horse there. But I do like to be high when I listen to music at times too.
Yeah.
I find it's nice for staying present in it, getting connected to deeper other thoughts that spring off it. I want to be able to go with those. But yeah, no, music is something that it's on in my house all the time, but it's not just background music.
Yeah.
I don't play certain music in my house. I only play positive music, only play positive things I want my kids or my family to hear.
Absolutely.
But no, music, love music. I think that if you go to a live concert, this day and age, you might see more people smoking weed than drinking.
Yeah. Which is interesting. I don't know. Let's not digress there too far, because that could be a whole conversation. Yeah,
but there are far less fights at live events now.
Yeah. All right. We're going to jump into my favorite section, which is overrated versus underrated. I'll throw a bunch of things at you. Tell me whether you think they're over or underrated and why.
Okay.
So we'll start with one that's common: mocktails.
I'll say underrated.
Okay.
Underrated being the prices are high.
Yeah, but, so why should we pay as much for a mocktail as a cocktail?
I think they should be priced a little lower, but I like what it's about, and I like that it gives people the option.
It's so, it seems like it should be somewhere between a cocktail and a soda or something at a restaurant, where it's not quite $16 or $15, but oftentimes I'll order a mocktail. I feel like not mistreated, but I'm like, what happened here? This is just juice and rosemary and
100%. So if the cocktail is 16, maybe that thing could be at 8 or 6, something. Make it easier for people to make that maybe smarter, or maybe healthier decision, or just an alternative decision. If, hey, I don't want to drink tonight. Hey, I'm driving tonight, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I would like to see, yes, that'd be cool if the price point was somewhere in the middle versus the high, but I do like the option being there, and I do want to support people's sobriety if they want to take advantage.
Okay, next one. Living in Fresno High neighborhood, over or underrated?
Underrated.
Okay.
People from other parts of town, Woodward Park, Clovis, my buddies that live there, were raised there, whatever, they have a perception of this side of town in terms of how the people would look or act, which is completely off and completely wrong to have both. But also, it just feels, for me and for my family, it feels like we're very welcomed here and more loved in this community. I have deep connections with people who I just see on my walks every day that actually know my kids. And so I guess the shorter answer is the people of the area is why I think it's underrated.
I think so too. Next one, I ask every guest this, Me and Ed's Pizza.
Overrated.
Okay, why?
It's the branding's great. They've done amazing. But I think there's other pizzas that are better at the same price point or lower price point. Anesio. Come on.
Yeah. And that's almost in a different category.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. South of Shaw Pizza.
Yeah. South of Shaw. That's my preferred pizza these days.
Yeah. I think those crush. And South of Shaw Pizza is $16 to $20. And that's what me and Ed's is. South of Shaw is going to have better homemade ranch, better service, and you're supporting the dollar in your area more.
Yeah. I think if my wife heard that, those were fighting words about the ranch. But I agree with you. The ranch is better at South of Shaw.
Oh, yeah.
Next one, traveling with small kids.
It's underrated.
Okay.
You got to do
it. Some people look like it's too stressful. They're not going to remember this. What's your counter to that?
It's hard, but it's underrated. So my kids, let me preface it. My kids currently are 2 and 5. We just got back last week from Cancun. So we've done Mexico a few times with our kids, Cancun, Puerto Vallarta, Cabo. We've done Hawaii a few times with our kids and Costa Rica. So we keep in our bubble of about 6 hours. My wife is an amazing woman and she works in the education field. So she probably has tricks that help stretching a few minutes here and there on flights and in airports, and that helps. The other thing is I don't want to do it if I'm not doing it with my kids. I'm 40, I waited a long time to have kids, and so I want to do everything I can with my kids. Hell yeah, it's tough at times, and there's moments where it is what it is. But overall, I'm always super happy to do it, and my kids are too.
Okay, next one, dry January. Like sobriety challenges, if you will. Are those, because sometimes I've have some friends that did 75 hard recently.
Yeah, yep.
And I always wonder about the actual success rate or the value of just doing it for short bursts. You think dry January is over or underrated?
I'm going to say underrated. If anything gives somebody that extra boost to do what they are wanting to do or on the fence of doing, if it's not drinking, if it's alcohol, then I'm with it. I support it. Do I think a lot of it ends up being talk and fluff? Yeah, but a percentage of those people got the ball rolling and hopefully stuck with it. And again, I've seen drugs and alcohol at all levels, and I want to encourage anything that is someone's sobriety.
Yeah. All right. Next one. Know about this. I'm doing a little research. Getting involved with a Rotary Club. Is that over or underrated? I don't feel like people from my generation really are as involved in these kind of fraternal organizations. Do you think, I know you've been involved in one. Do you think it's over or underrated?
It hurts to say that from my experience, it was overrated. Okay. I was involved for about 5-ish years in a Rotary in my 30s. I was a board member for over 2 of those years. It was hard to, it was around the Grizzly Fest days, and they would support Grizzly Fest. They had a presence at Grizzly Fest. They connected with our nonprofit, but it was just really hard to connect with them and for them to see me as, at the time I owned a dispensary. So my classification was alternative health. I was the first person in our Rotary ever that, and within 1 week they let you know yes or no. It took me 3 weeks to get approved.
Yeah.
Made no sense. And so things like that, those walls that weren't getting broken down after a few years.
So some cultural homogeneity in those organizations.
There definitely was. Yes. And then our average age was 20 years older than me. And so that was a huge thing with me trying to connect through them and their resources. It wasn't as smooth as I'd like it to have been. And then it was very time consuming. Also having other passions and kids, it just became more like the bang wasn't worth the buck. And then also it was costly as well.
Pickleball.
Oh, pickleball is underrated. Pickleball.
It still is? Because I feel like it's hit mainstream.
It's okay. Pickleball's hella mainstream for sure. It's still growing though. I'm going to reference, there's a pickleball tournament we've done. We just finished it November. It was our 4th year. Every year it's grown by at least 20% every year. So if I just look off that, it's up. I don't feel like you're going to get surprised when anyone says they like it anymore. But it's exploded in terms of what people are buying and the accessories and things like that. So sponsors view pickleball like they view tennis and golf now. Whereas if you play that, you have access to that, sponsors are interested now. Whereas if it's just dudes playing racquetball or whatever, they don't care. But now the explosion of the gear, the bags, the brands. So now it's got that big boom. But yeah, I still think underrated. I still think it's fun. It's cool.
Anything to get people moving. Community. Even if your irritating parents always want to play pickleball with you, it's good that people are just moving. And we're just being snobby.
And it's a community. It really is a community. I dig that.
Yeah. Two more. Acai bowls. Have they had their moment? Have they peaked?
Fudge. That's really tough. I love acai bowls. I'm going to go overrated.
Okay. Why?
Just to try to be a little different here. I'm in the middle on it. Definitely had a pop for a few years. There's a few great ones in town.
What's your best acai bowl in town?
The best one, I would say for me, is I like Rio. And I know they're a chain, which means they probably buy their acai base at Costco. Loving Seed is probably more quality, but I like how Rio's taste more.
Okay.
Loving Seed's great people too.
Let's say I gave you a lifetime pass to either Outside Lands or Coachella. What would you choose?
Outside Lands. But I'd sell them both just for Cali Roots.
There we go.
But I'd go Outside Lands. It's more chill, a little bit. The makeup of music would probably be more suiting for me, or even like thinking of my kids go for a day.
Outside Lands. Yeah. I think if you were to answer that question on a resale basis, you'd probably pick the Coachella tickets. But yeah, if you were going for just the experience, you'd probably go to Outside
Lands. And I've never been to Coachella. I've been to Outside Lands a few times. Last time I went to Outside Lands, shows you how long back it was, but Kanye was a headliner on one of the days.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was amazing.
All right, let's jump into sober partying questions. Do you categorize caffeine as a drug?
It is, but I don't. Like when we're just talking like drugs and things like that on the loud words, big words, no. But it's the thing that I am addicted to most in my life.
Okay. Do you think you could have a sober event in the evening, or is there something about mornings that feels right?
I think it'd be far more challenging in the evening. I think it's easier to capitalize on being sober in the morning and all like the things that come with the good energy in terms of you're more likely to exercise, be in the garden, things like that. Nighttime would be a far larger challenge. And you'd have to add in different activations and sponsors and things like that haven't been done before, being that we've seen night events forever. You'd have to really do something new to change the game.
You know, there's this idea that goes around that people need alcohol at events in order to ease social anxiety. Mm-hmm. I found that it can ease it or increase it depending on the situation. Do you think that's just a false narrative that we need it in order to socialize effectively, get out of our comfort zone?
I do. Again, just my sample size of what I've seen with the two Grand Risings so far, it has changed my perception completely. No, I don't think it's needed. I think people are actually more confident without. I think people are more sociable and more brilliant, especially when I'm talking about Grand Rising and the settings that I'm seeing them in. People are talkative as can be. People are connecting. So yeah, I think it's actually something that we think we need. It's an insecurity thing, but you truly don't need it. It doesn't make you do anything better, except maybe put your foot in your mouth.
Okay. What do you think in terms of the Venn diagram between like fitness community and sober parties? Are those like basically overlapping in your mind, or do you get some people that aren't? Because it feels like, at least the ones that I see online, feels like if you're into fitness, you're going to be into these sober parties. And if you're not into fitness, the likelihood goes down.
Yeah, that's what I don't like about the ones I was seeing. So there were some that have inspired me greatly. There's something called Early Birds, these dudes out of Glendale. The two guys who do it, one of them is, I grew up with him, and his cousin is my best friend. Okay. So I studied them as they did it. I went out and observed how they did it. They inspired me greatly. And what inspired me about them was their way of blending it. So I like a lot of the wellness events, and they're cool in their own way, but when it is just all one way, then it's like more niche, right? I wanted to be a community. I wanted everything. And so it's a fine line of trying to get that mix. But I think we've found it, or we're starting to find it. But if it's too extreme, it's going to scare people off. So it was like, all we do is this, and it's only focused on this. Then I think other people are going to be like, oh, I don't really want to check that out. But if it's, hey, these are examples, or these are like introductions to these kind of things, and it's in this fun party and blah, 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 like I think it's easier to take that step or whatever, check it out. You know what I mean?
Do you think people are better or worse dancers when they're sober? Because sometimes at a wedding, I'm like, oh man, I wish there was like some kind of booze here. I've been to some dry weddings and we're going to
get that.
Dance. Because there's dancing or a big part of your
party. Yeah, I'm going to say alcohol people, because they're dancing more and they're just throwing out some
everything. So that's back to the social anxiety thing.
Yeah, right? I think there's more people. I think people are dancing more wild when they're drinking. Like they're just giving it everything. But a Grand Rising dance floor is fucking jumping with 100 people. But The weddings, yeah, because you see everything. You see the guy who never dances who just has something that he wants to hit. Or that.
So maybe the dancing doesn't get better, it just gets more energetic.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've noticed that at alcohol-fueled parties, there's a kind of buildup that happens as people consume more and more, and then it hits that like peak moment where people are drunk and wild. What does the momentum or energy look like at a sober party? Does it have a similar kind of buildup, or is it...
Yeah, 100%. Okay. So in Grand Horizon, we have something on the back end called the peak. Okay. And so it's not alcohol, but... Normal, yes, you're 100% right. People are drinking. Eventually, people are drunk. People are shithouse. People are buzzing crazy, whatever. Yeah, all the good energy first. The way we do the music at Grand Rising is how we do the DJs in certain increments and we move it around. But it basically is there's a DJ who plays at a certain time that is supposed to be like a 15-minute peak. And that's supposed to be when the dance floor is the most packed. So it's usually 100 people. This time it should have 150. It goes up a little louder. It's like a 15-minute window. It's usually in the... So if our event's from 9 to 1, usually that peak is around... 11-ish, 11:30. It's not in the last 90 minutes.
Yeah, that's when it dissipates a little. Yeah. People start leaving. Yeah. Okay.
And that's
they
what's
go
really
to lunch or whatever.
And with these wellness events, what's dope too is some people come for 2 hours of the four. Some people come for all four. Some just pop in for an hour. I'm going to have a drink. I'm going to dance hard. I'm going to check out the vendors and I'm gone.
Yeah.
I like that too.
Yeah, that's true with all parties, right? Some people are going to be the early birds that leave early and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I haven't been one of your events yet, but I'm excited to check it out. And I'm curious what you learned sociologically, like watching people at a sober event. Yeah. I'm sure it's like people are engaging in slightly different ways. What have you learned about people doing these kinds of events?
It seems to me like people are more confident.
Really? Okay.
It sounds weird, but I've seen people connect and build friends. And then I've seen a few people that are now dating that I saw them at the first or second one, like connecting and things like that. So I feel like there's a more confidence thing going on. And I don't know exactly what it comes from.
Okay.
But it feels like people are comfortable because people are bringing their kids and their significant others. And I would never bring my kids anywhere unless I'm comfortable. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so that's a really good sign. We've sold out of kids tickets at the first and the second. And people are being respectful too. So it feels like it's safer.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just because there's no alcohol or because it's daytime as well.
Yeah. It seems like there's a similar energy to run clubs right now.
Yes.
Where there's lots of people showing up. It's almost like dating opportunities because they're looking... The idea that the exclusive places you could go to meet people are apps or bars feels like it's just it's a terrible thing for the world because it's like, I'm going to go to a place where vice reigns supreme, if you will, and that's where I'm going to choose a partner.
Yep.
And so it seems like people are pursuing these run clubs because they're looking for people that have a little bit of like balance to their lives, if you will.
It's definitely people looking for community. And like it used to be, you have to do every race. You have to pay for $60 to do every race. And those are fun. The Cali Classics are cool if you do some of those, or if you do marathons, that's great. I like that. But you don't have to pay to run every week now.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. I think that people are finding their communities. People come from new into town or fresh out of a relationship or whatever. They find this running club and they get absorbed into it and they find their community and their people.
Yeah.
We have a huge run club support with Grand Rising and it's super dope and it definitely has helped with some of the growth. I love to see the people. I think it's a great place to meet. It used to be like we joke around like a grocery store, a farmer's market.
Yeah.
A run club. It is legit. Any of my buddies that are single and like looking to try to meet someone or you think you can meet them under a certain more healthy situation or whatever it is. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Let's talk about Fresno a little bit before we get to logistics about the next event.
Yeah.
So Fresno has been called one of the drunkest cities in California in the United States.
Yeah.
That study has questionable methodology, so I don't know how much we should believe it. But we also have a really high rate of DUIs. Like we talked about before, there's a lot of events in town that are completely driven by alcohol. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find events like outside of church that are not alcohol based.
Yeah.
How should we think about that as like as someone that cares about the life and health of a city? How should we think about that?
Yeah, I think that's super sad actually. And just hearing it, I smiled for a minute, but it's like a smile and shake my head. Like that's rough.
Yeah.
I thought, and I still think it's really important to create events that aren't based off alcohol. And so when you do an example is when you do a music festival and stuff like that, you bring in a lot of money through alcohol sales and those deals you make before the festival. For instance, again, to refer to Grand Rising, we don't have any alcohol sales. So you have to find a way to still make money that can support your event without using the low bearing fruit, essentially, which is the alcohol, which is it's acceptable everywhere, which is a huge challenge. But I'm hoping to inspire people to do events and find ways to break even and make money on events without alcohol and finding new lanes of sponsors and community supports and vendors that are there. People just have to work harder. We need to provide more for younger people and give them more options to where alcohol isn't just the norm where it's expected everywhere. Like, that's just gross. There's nothing else in society where it's just that's expected everywhere. So I would be honored to give people more options and to inspire people to do that just the way that I've been inspired. I've already seen a few events since Grand Rising that are daytime coffee, matcha parties, things like that, that our idea isn't original, but I think we've had some, we could have inspired those events. And I think that's super dope because we were inspired to do ours.
I've heard this comment from a lot of people that in Fresno, there's about 5% of the population that shows up to every event. And then 90% just is in their homes. And then there's this other kind of fringe 5% that occasionally comes. As an event organizer, do you perceive that to be true? And is that a problem?
I think it's hard to, I think there's some truth to it. I think it's hard to tap into all groups of Fresno and Clovis. I think there's events that are catered towards certain groups. I don't think that's a problem. I just want to, as an organizer, I want to be able to tap into all of them so we can do shows at Valley Children's Stadium and take larger swings. But it seems like right now with the way the world is, I have more confidence and I would advise people to do smaller to more micro events versus going for 10,000 plus, do something for a few hundred, do something for a thousand. There's good venues to support that in town, like Rainbow Ballroom. There's good outdoor venues. I lost my train of thought outside.
Yeah,
of that.
I guess, should we be trying to get those people out of their houses? You know what I mean? It feels like in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. Lean into the people that are really like amped about the events. And if people move to Fresno or from Fresno and they're just here to sit in their homes, what are we going to do about that? There's not much.
I think you lean into your base, but still try to grow it. You're still trying to develop. I think if you're an event organizer or promoter, it's your job to do everything you can to make people know about your event and to go as hard as you can to promote your event. So if that's doing podcasts, if that's doing your own promo, if that's doing the news, whatever it is. And so I just think it's super hard to get to those people. But I also think a huge percentage of promoters just do rinse and repeats. They don't try super hard. They just take the whatever deals they have or which organizations they're working with. And it's like, cool, let's roll it out and do that again.
Yeah.
I'd rather see people work harder and show their heart more.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people talk about how COVID killed a lot of things, events, stuff like that. But now I've started to see this kind of change of perspective that saw COVID as not necessarily something that just destroyed, but maybe clarified for people, like values or what they're interested in. Do you see any positive effects from COVID as event organizer in terms of refreshing people's perspectives on what's important?
That's a great question. Cost has definitely gone up. That's not a positive.
Okay. Yeah.
Cost has gone up on everything in the world, right?
Yeah.
Yes, the things have definitely become positive. And my takeaways that were positive were like how tight I was at the time. I had just one child. And so for 6 months at least, I was just at home every day with my wife and child. So I was, my little household was taken care of. Our bond was extremely tight. I loved that. A lot of people I'll meet and they'll talk about those years were really terrible. And I get why they say that. But like in my house, the years were awesome. They were beautiful. Mm-hmm. I've never been closer with people in my life. So other takeaways were I have better relationships with my parents and certain family because I'm checking on them more and building those bonds and reconnecting. Obviously rough times because of people getting sick and the political climate. But the best takeaway for me was just reaffirming relationships with my household and parents.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's say you're the czar of public events for the city of Fresno for a month. Fun. And you could organize, you could go attack certain pieces of red tape or introduce programs to make it easier to do public events in Fresno. What are maybe one or two things that as either issues or stuff that should be enhanced to help event organizers?
That's a deep one. That's a great question. Yeah, I definitely think that when promoters are putting $250,000 to a few million dollars into projects, they should be treated properly, and the city should look at partnerships with those people, especially when they've done it for a decade straight. I think the city dropped the ball on Grizzly Fest 100% with how it ended, with how they handled it. And they always try to push us downtown still to this day. But nothing against downtown, but I'm just saying that's what the city does. Ask me the question one more time. I've started to get
I guess what could you do if you were the czar of public events to make it easier for people to put on public events?
Yeah, so it would be nice if the person they had in charge of events did it have event backing. The city needs to just have guidelines for this is how it works. If you want to do these events, these are the things you need from us outside of venue things. If the city had a clear understanding or things they could give to promoters or people even trying to start their own businesses, that would help. They have a parks guy who's like in charge of events. Like the guy who's doing 13 jobs and you have to call him seven times to get a call back. And
So he's organizing public events. It's terrible. About lawn care.
Working with the city is so hard. It's so hard. There's times where I look at a venue and the city owns it. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to go through all that red tape. Let me try to find the owner operator because they're going to appreciate my business more. They're going to look me in the eyes. Yeah. They're going to give a F about me. They're going to, if I tell them, hey, I want to build this here, they're going to listen to me. The city, we tried to get a 5 and 10 year with Grizzly Fest and they weren't doing that with us.
Yeah.
Even after putting millions of dollars into that and tax and stuff. And they need to just make it easier is the thing. So if it was my job, I would sit with the people who are doing large events and talk to them and get their feedback.
Yeah.
And try to organize something, try to put something together. I would give them time. I would listen.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money being left on the table by the city. Yeah. If just on the promotional level.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like they handle large events very well. What would you tell yourself if you could talk to yourself 10 years ago about how to organize events? What have you learned about planning events and the best ways to streamline them, to make them successful?
For me, it's to take my swing. So I've had a few ideas that I sat on, and so Grand Rising is not a new idea. It was an idea that was before that got re-inspired by some other stuff. So that idea was ready. I just didn't have it. The time wasn't right, or I didn't have the confidence to do it or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for me, it's trusting my ideas. So Grizzly Fest, it was two people that created it, but it came from an idea that I had, right? And so that was my idea. So I had that idea. Aaron was better at everything outside of the idea, but I had the idea. So I've had ideas that have hit. I've had ideas for other strains or the businesses that took off. And so it's like just trusting that and knowing like,
trusting your instincts.
Trusting my instincts. Yeah. I don't articulate the best, but when it comes to getting the project done, I'm extremely confident in my ability. And so it's just the confidence, but also I don't always have to stick it to people and let them know. And sometimes Evan can be petty.
Yeah.
And they, as a promoter and event organizer, you can be petty at times.
Yeah.
And just,
it's hard when you have so many roadblocks being thrown at you. It's hard not to just get pissed off all the time.
Yes.
It's a miracle you're calm half the time with what you deal with.
And so it's just, for me, it's to not be petty because I'm able to help or give advice to others. And that in itself is like a good position to be in.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll see people doing stuff and I'm like, that's what I'm. But there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah.
And so why be petty? Eventually, when we did Grizzly Fest, there were music festivals happening. It was nothing new. Grand Rising type things have been happening. Where it's just a new.
Yeah. I feel the similar way about podcasts. I started this in middle of 2019 and have been doing it for a while now.
Yeah.
So hundreds of episodes at this point. And there's always people that pop up that are trying to start podcasts locally. There's some better than others, some that have long lifespans or short lifespans. Yeah. And I always viewed it. Actually, I had someone ask me about that, if I was annoyed about some other podcast that had started, had a pretty similar format to mine. And I was like, no, because if we're going to be a big city, we have to have a lot of things.
Yeah.
And big cities don't just have one or two or three or five podcasts doing something similar. They have a lot of them.
Right.
And so I think that for me is the evolution of like when we are going to evolve as a city is when we start looking at these things less zero-sum games and actually what kind of environment are we creating? Because there's some people that will listen to this and be like bored out of their minds.
Yeah.
And then they'll prefer something that's, I don't know, different.
Yeah.
And I like that because there's no insecurity for me in someone telling me they don't like the show or don't like my perspective because we're all just people. But I wish more people thought that way.
Yeah, it's cool to have misunderstandings or I don't want to call them arguments or difference of opinions.
Yeah.
What's super dope is when you and someone have one but you both see eye to eye on it. Because then it's, okay, yeah, I get it. You think that way. I think this way. This is why.
Yeah.
But I respect you because you kept it real with me and we talked it out. Let's keep it moving. No issue.
Yeah, let's talk about your next Grand Rising event. It's January 10th.
Yes, sir.
So give us the rundown. What's going to be happening? Is it sold out? Are there tickets available? What's going on?
Tickets are available. We've sold. So the goal for this next one is to do about 400 tickets.
Okay.
We're a little over 200, so we're tracking really well. We're still 20-some-odd days away. Usually a huge percentage comes in the final 10 days, so I feel great about it. This next one is going to be at Azara Supper Club. It's at Freiner for Washington, right by Woodward Park. A few reasons we moved it there was we had outgrown the previous venue, which was great, growing pains. We wanted to be close to Woodward Park because we have a free community run and bike ride attached to our event. So it'd be super dope to take advantage of the trails. And then Azara is a new place. January is a groggy month in Fresno, and it's all windows. So all the sunlight will come in. So we have the indoor and outdoor there with two music setups, two stages. So it just really works in terms of facilitating parts of our vendors, a few sponsors. I'm really excited about it though. So tickets are on sale. We have something called Posh. Posh VIP is the website. You can find the link through our Instagram or TikTok or any of my personal pages.
Sweet. Yeah. I think it's cool that you're doing that side of town, because the other thing that I've noticed in Fresno is people tend to do stuff where they live or just want to keep stuff local to their neighborhood or their community. And so to stretch it out and try different neighborhoods, that was mostly connected to Woodward. You weren't thinking also about the dimension of trying to tap into a new market?
No, for sure. We were. Yeah. But Woodward was huge. What happened though is the owner of the club, Lewis Everick, who's I've known for 20 some odd years. He owns a few venues. He reached out before the first Grand Rising and was like, I'm into this. Eventually, I'd like to see it come to my place. I want to see it grow. For the second one, he was a fan. So that was cool. He would.
And for a guy that owns a club too, you're like, what are you doing it from 9 to 1 p.m. in the morning?
That's true.
Like, no one's running around a nightclub in the morning. It's untapped time.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I wanted to not just be a one-trick pony in terms of like, we're just here in Tower, we're just here downtown, which is great, and that's more of where I live and spend my time. But I go everywhere in Fresno. I like Clovis. And so we want to feature other venues if the venue facilitates the experience. And so it worked out that for this one, Azar does. There's a few other venues in town that we haven't touched yet that I'm super excited to get to. And then there's a few venues that are just land that I'm excited to do a larger scale one and build out there. So bring in fencing, bring in staging, bring in toilets, that kind of thing. Not a festival, but a big one day.
Nice.
Another thing though about Azar that I'm excited about is it'll be a higher level of production on the inside. So that'll be fun to add into to the mix.
In terms of food and drink, what's going to be available with this?
Yeah. So we just got our deal done for some of our sponsors. Coffee this time will be done by Dutch Bros exclusively. We're really happy about that. Other vendors we have something called Catalyst, which is a clean energy drink. They'll be there on the drink side. We have a juice company there doing just fresh squeezed juices. The venue we're at, Azara, will be doing mocktails. And then we'll also have water and tea provided by a honey vendor. So we'll cover the gambit of morning type drinks. Alcohol is the only thing that won't be served there. And then on the vendor and activation side, we'll still have like our cold plunge. We're going to have somebody doing stretches, stretching people out after the run, inside and outside. We're going to have a Summanoon massage. We have a photo booth. We have a gut doctor. A lot of things that just are in line to help people connect, to try to feel better.
Sure. So
that's it. We also have a marijuana sponsor, Embark. They've been a sponsor on the first, second, and now the third. And they're promoting some of their kind of pain relief type products. So they have like their own little lounge there. No products are sold, but they're there to give information.
Okay. So your CBD kind of
absolutely
stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I really like Embark. I like the way that they do their business. They're one of the dispensaries that I like on all levels in terms of Embark does our pickleball tournament. Embark can do golf tournament. Their branding and their staff and their things like that cross over to everyone. Excellent. Where certain brands can't do that.
Absolutely. We always close these podcasts with book recommendations. Okay. Are there a book or two that you'd like to recommend to listeners that were important to you?
I'll give you one. I'm not going to front that I'm a big reader. The only book, or one of the only books I've read that carries weight to me still, as my dad gave it to me, is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm a super simple man. And so reading a simple book and getting simple lessons on savings, finance, things like that were helpful to me.
Yeah.
So that's the only one. I read other books, but that's the only thing I could really talk about outside of
autobiographies. Yeah. It feels like that's like that kind of like that basic financial literacy is missing for a lot of people. And so even though it's a simple book, I think it's probably one of the most important ones to read.
Yeah.
Just being an adult trying to function in the world. What was your biggest lesson from that book?
So in our era, I'm not going to age you, but in my era, we weren't taught finances. Checkbooks, bank accounts, credit. That wasn't taught in school.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know about any of that till I was about 14, 15. I started to learn about it. And I wish I knew well before. But anyway, so the simple lessons in that book were applied to that. And then also my dad owned a computer business. So luckily he caught on that I was lacking in those things and got me going.
There we go.
Yeah. He owned a business. We should have been working on it a little sooner, but thank God we got going.
Yeah. Evan, this has been a pleasure. Thanks so much for talking with
me. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I reached out to you. I wanted to come on here. So thank you. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/FresnosBest. We'll see you next time.